In London yesterday, 39-year-old David Cameron made his debut in the House of Commons as the leader of Britain's Conservative Party. The occasion was Prime Minister's question time when the new leader of the opposition rose to address Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The first issue that the Prime Minister and I are going to have to work together on is getting the good bits of his education reforms through the House of Commons and into law.
Though that was a decidedly non-confrontational opening, David Cameron wrote a column for the Guardian newspaper in 2002 about the often rowdy debates in Parliament, a column that the newspaper republished just before his first appearance in Parliament as leader of the opposition yesterday. Yes, it's theatrical, he wrote, even gladiatorial, with backbenchers waving and cheering like the crowds at the Circus Maximus. And that, he added, is the point. A prime minister or a leader of the opposition who was slow-witted, corrupt, or simply not up to the job would not survive. Well, of course, the system in this country is very different. The President of the United States never appears in Congress except in the very formal setting of the State of the Union message, and he never has to joust with his opponents. Over the past week or so, for example, President Bush began a series of speeches on his plan for victory in Iraq. And David Green, NPR's White House correspondent, joins us now from the White House. David, nice to have you on the program, as always.
Good to be here, Neil.
And you noted last night in a story you did on All Things Considered that the circumstances of speeches by the president and the vice president on Iraq, tell us about the settings, if you will.
Well, they have chosen military settings recently, all over the place. The president spoke at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. He was abroad speaking at a base in South Korea. He was at a base in Alaska giving military speeches about the war, a lot of cheering from soldiers and others in the audience. And I think what this does, Neil, is you get coverage of these speeches, looks rah-rah, there's an exuberant audience, no sign of protest, no sign of dissent at all.
And no questions.
No questions, indeed. And as you put it, very, very different when you compare this to Great Britain and what Prime Minister Tony Blair has to go through.
And it's not just the president. The vice president gave a speech the other day on Iraq at Fort Drum, the home of the 10th Mountain Division up in Watertown, New York.
He did. And it really does allow both the president and vice president to get their message out about the war without any sign of protest. And there were some complaints. There's been some criticism that the president's been using these settings in very political ways. He's gone after Democrats. He has said the criticism of pre-war intelligence, suggestions that he went to war and misled the country before going to a war in Iraq, that it's irresponsible to make those suggestions, doing it in military settings that's supposed to be apolitical places.
Mm-hmm. There's another thing that they've been doing now for some years, and that is getting those little slogans, like in this case, "Victory in Iraq," on a screen behind the president while he's speaking.
They're very good at that. There are some very good people behind that campaign. There's been a lot written about them. You have to think that the message can almost be subliminal sometimes when the president is standing in front of something like that. Victory in Iraq is one example. When you get words like success, victory, strategy behind the president, or on the cover of a document, as they did recently when they put it out last week, it gets into the psyche. It gets into the minds of Americans. At least that's what they're hoping.
Mm-hmm. White House correspondent David Green, thanks very much.
Pleasure, Neil.
White House correspondent David Green joined us. You'll be amazed to hear from our booth at the White House. Well, joining us now is David Gergen, who served as White House advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. In one of those jobs, he was director of communications. He's currently a professor of public service at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government, and he joins us by phone from his home. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Good to speak with
you. Thank you,
David.
Neil.
Yes. I wonder... One of the advantages of being a president as opposed to a prime minister is the White House has very clear control over every situation in which a president is photographed.
That's quite true. The venues have been increasingly under the control of the White House over the last several years. And with this administration, obviously, there is almost an iron discipline about where they allow him to appear. You may recall that during the campaign, President Bush spoke in front of many, many different audiences that were ticketed, and you only if you were a Bush partisan, were you allowed into the campaign event.
And this control over these images, I think there was responding to the president's speech in Annapolis last week, John Kerry and other Democrats said, you know, well, we're not the president of the United States. We can't whistle up the Corps of midshipmen at Annapolis to stand in front of.
You sure as heck can't put yourself on an aircraft carrier. I've never seen that before, as we had a couple of years ago.
And it is a situation that I think... It's credited, I guess, if that's the right word, with the Reagan administration, where really there was great effort to control the backdrop of wherever it was the president was going to appear.
Well, I think it does go back to the Reagan administration, but, you know, there are roots that go back, of course, before that. John F. Kennedy was widely accused of, quote, news management. This has been with us for a long time. Back in Eisenhower's administration, the press secretary could actually tell the networks what segments of press conferences they could put on the air after they brought their cameras in. So these have old roots. But it's also true, Neil, though, that when a president begins to shield himself off from the harsh realities and the harsh questions, two things happen. One, you get a bubble effect within the White House. They're groupthink, and you're tempted to think that all those people cheering at you, even though they have tickets, represent true America when they don't, and therefore you get quite complacent about your policies, or you don't question yourself as hard as you should. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is that the public picks up on this. But, you know, we've got an increasingly sophisticated public that sees the transparency of these things. When they see a group of military audiences, they say it doesn't have a political positive effect. It often can backfire on a president.
We're talking with David Gergen about the White House and image control. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And David, you mentioned backfiring. Mistakes can happen too. The video released of the soldiers in Iraq apparently being prepped for their conversation
Absolutely,
with the president.
It becomes too over controlled, and I think the danger for this president is that. That he was seen as operating in a bubble before the war in Iraq, and then during the war and during the Katrina period,
right.
And now increasingly during this Iraq period. And I think that's been part of his political problem, because he's not seen as in sort of in the give and take of politics. And the advantage of the weekly question session and answer period in the parliament is that there's real accountability. There's serious accountability on the part of ministers, and I think that's always been healthy. If we're going to give people this much power, as we do prime ministers and presidents, we have to also have ways to hold them accountable for how they're using that power. And Britain has a system with a parliament. Here, when the president does not face questions from Congress, the substitute we have in this country is the press conference. And what this president hasn't done and should do, or really desperately needs to do if he wants to rebuild his credibility, in my judgment, is to hold an evening press conference where he can answer some tough questions about Iraq, about the torture, about Shiites, killing Sunnis while wearing police uniforms that we've given them after we've trained them, all the tough questions that are coming up now. I think if he could do that before Christmas, that would do far more than any of these speeches have accomplished for him.
And obviously, the White House completely controls whether the president receives questions or not. I mean, we've all seen shots, of not just of President Bush, but of other presidents, even walking to the helicopter,
right.
And they've selected.
I can't hear you.
Yeah, or selective hearing, and they hear a question they like.
Very selective. Sam Donaldson could be up there shouting at the top of his lungs some hard question. Reagan would never hear it, and Sam would whisper something about Nancy, and Reagan would wheel around. What'd you say, Sam?
The president obviously can also schedule an interview with one of the correspondents from the networks, one of the newspapers, that sort of thing, or not.
Well, that's true, but I can't stress enough that while there are all these, I'm guilty of using some of these methods, techniques to try to control the message, of course, but at the end of the day, what I've learned over time, the accountability, the give and take, does far more to our president's credibility than does these carefully scripted scenes in which there are lots of cheering that nobody thinks is authentic.
In a recent article, you put it this way: the president cannot govern by leading half the people. He must reach out to moderates and, yes, Democrats, if he hopes to save the rest of his second term.
I believe that very strongly. And, he had an increase in the New York Times poll, and there have been some other polls who've shown it gone up down around the low 40s, which is better. But that's his base coming back. It's not yet the moderates and independents who have fled. The moderate, he's been down sharply among independents. And, of course, Democrats are down, way down. And I think for the sake of the country, not just the presidency, it would be far better if he wants to hold the country together through these agonies of Iraq and the other issues we're going to face in the next 3 years. I think that the Reagan example, when he went more back to the center in the last 2 years after Iran-Contra, really does serve as a model for this president. I hope that they will still think about that in the White House.
And given the level of dissent, it's interesting, in the last couple of speeches on Iraq, first on the training of Iraqi forces, he said, well, we made some mistakes to begin with by training those forces to try to defeat an external enemy as opposed to focusing on the internal side. And then speaking about the reconstruction of Iraq the other day, he said, well, it's not been going as well as we'd like in some places. A president who's been loath to admit any kind of mistake seems to be admitting some mistakes.
And the admissions are grudging, to be sure, but nonetheless, we should welcome them because they show that a White House that's beginning to understand the realities here at home and recognizes that this war has to be fought on more than one front. It's not just on the ground in Iraq. It is in the arena of public opinion in the United States and overseas. And he's been losing that on that second front, and of course the first front itself is problematic. So I do think you see, and I think we're going to see more signs. There's a lot of talk. There was a piece in the New York Daily News today that there's going to be a shakeup in his team in January, Don Rumsfeld may be involved in that. Let's wait and see. But there are signals now that the administration is beginning to try to change course, ever so gradually, but try to begin to change course. And for the country's sake, you know, we do need to come together on this war in Iraq.
Well, Secretary Rumsfeld said today on Capitol Hill, told reporters he's not planning to leave anytime soon. So
we'll wait and see.
We'll wait and see. David Gergen, thanks very much for being with us, as always.
Thank you, Neil.
David Gergen is director of the Center for Public Leadership and professor of public service at Harvard University, and was kind enough to join us today by phone from his home up there in Boston. Tomorrow it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here. We'll see you on Monday. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.